That's me, Dr. Marty Lanoff, private practice. Basic primer on types of practices. One can go into research, one can go into clinical, one can go into a hybrid of the two. You can be an employee of various entities, or one can be in private practice like I am. If you're an employee, hospital institution-based, industrial-based, group, large versus small, single specialty versus multi-specialty. For instance, an 8-person physiatric group, you can go work for them right out of residency. One can have equity in partnership. As an employee, it's not nearly as common. Private practice, the definition is the work of a professional healthcare provider who is independent of economic or policy control by professional peers. There's the solo private practitioner, which in our field is pretty rare. It is out there. It's probably, I'm guessing, I think last numbers are less than 10% or so, or 15%. As opposed to being in a large versus small group, which is surprising because we don't have a lot of call. One of the problems with a lot of fields being in a solo private practice is you don't want to be on call every night. Or you can arrange call with somebody in a different group. And we'll discuss call, but I got to tell you, I get more than one or two calls in a month, and I got to take a nap. I really get very few calls. Certainly, I take care of things during the day, but I'm primarily outpatient. Inpatient, you do take call, but it's less frequent in some groups than others. Group, again, single, multi-specialty, large, small. One can participate in what's called a buy-in, meaning initially you'll work for a group, and over time, when you spend more time there, you'll become an equity partner. Different ways to structure that. So employee versus partnership issues. If you are an employee, things life is different versus being a partner of a group or a solo practitioner. Vacation time. If I take vacation time being a private practitioner, I'm not making money when I'm not in the office. You pretty much have to be in the office to be making money. Expenses, they're often covered if you're an employee as opposed to I have to pay my own expenses. Hours, I can make my own hours. As an employee, again, it depends. And there are many hybrids about being working as an employee, but your hours may not be your own, depending. I can take 2 months off if I want to go travel through Europe. It's just and possibly even financially, one can afford it. But what happens to the patients and the docs that are referring you patients during that time? You lose the referrals to somebody else. You come back, you've lost that referral stream. Not something one wants to do, but my life is pretty good. I take a fair amount of vacation whenever I want. Your job load, you can do whatever you like. I also do a lot of things for the academy, which is some of my spare time, not a lot of my spare time. Job security, any day now, so I could just lose my mind and do something really stupid, and 3 or 4 of my major referral sources get mad at me, and boy, that would be tough. I'm out of a job. I'm not planning on doing that. And I pay the bills. I write bills. I have a certain time allotted in my week where I'm paying for the bills, and somebody's got to do it. My type of practice, again, I'm in a multi-specialty group. I'm outpatient, musculoskeletal, interventional pain. I have 5 orthopedists. I have an equity partnership with them, meaning I kind of share the overhead, but I'm not necessarily an employee of theirs, which is very nice because I get to do what I want, and I have the freedom of doing that, and I do enjoy that. I've maintained my own phone line, my own stationery, and my own personal forum. So when my name goes out there, I actually get referrals from other orthopedic groups that compete with my orthopedic group. I do injections, for instance, for a group that's about a mile away. And they get along, but, they're competing for patients. They certainly do not refer to one another. I end up being able to work with both of them because I've maintained my autonomy, which is something really that's been difficult to do. Being a doctor, that's the business part of it. This is one of my favorite sayings. You listen to the patient, they'll tell you what's wrong with them. I tell my students that regularly. And you notice here I'm saying things in this slide says treatment modalities. How do I treat a patient? Diagnosis really doesn't belong under that. That is the most important thing. Figure out what's wrong with your patient. You can't treat them unless you know what's wrong with them. We take the time to diagnose. We have so many different multifunctional systems that we understand in the patient. Say you're a person who has back and leg pain and you go to a neurosurgeon, may not be that adept at figuring out it's really coming from the hip. An orthopedist who doesn't do spine will be able to do the hip but not necessarily evaluate the spine. I can do both, and I like to think do both well. Educating the patients is very important. You have to sell the person on the diagnosis so they buy into it and they go do the work that is necessary to get it better. If they don't buy the diagnosis, they're not going to go to physical therapy twice a week for a month and do their home exercises. What I do is I sell, and I tell my patients, I sell the diagnosis. It's an altruistic type of sale, but I'm selling them on what's wrong with them. physical therapy, exercise, as you see, medications and injections if necessary. I love telling patients, you know, I could give you an injection. I think you'll do okay without it. Surgery, I send patients for surgery. I send patients a couple times a week for surgery. I do. I see patients on a first visit, and I send them for surgery at times if there's nothing that can be done from a conservative standpoint. But I let them know my goal is to be here to save you from surgery, and if I can't, people come to me for second opinions for surgery all the time as well. This is a typical week. I flipped this slide together just, I think, taking the numbers from a typical week a few weeks ago. 20 spinal injections. I think my record in a day is 15. That's a lot of spinal injections. I'm proud to say that the majority are referred to me. I am not the guy who's saying these people need the injections. I'm also proud to say at least three or four patients in a 10-injection day. I say, you know what, I'm not really sure you need the injection. Why don't we try this or give it time, or maybe the diagnosis is something different. And think about it. If somebody comes in and they're referral of a neurosurgeon who says, you have a herniated disc, you need an epidural, and I say, you know, it's really your hip. They don't like to be wrong, so you have to couch it correctly so you don't ruin that referral stream, if you will. As you see, shoulders, knees, I inject. I do arthrograms for the MRI facility that we own, that the group owns. I don't do lots of EMGs. I find that EMGs in my practice can pretty much figure out what's wrong with a patient without having to do the EMG. It's a procedure, and in medicine today, procedures are how one gets reimbursed. You have the capability to do procedures. You have the obligation to try not to do those procedures to patients. Sometimes they're necessary. I do lots of evaluations, mostly consults from other physicians. I think that's probably wrong. I'd say about maybe 50-50. A lot of the patients now that I see are family and friends of people that I've already treated. I've treated Academy staff members, probably treated some relatives of people in the room, even though this is Texas. Five return visits. I love that. I love that. I have very few return visits. So if I'm seeing 30 new patients, but I only have five of them come back, what I'm doing, I'm saying, this is what's wrong with you. Go get better. I lay it out for them. I give them the plan. And I say, come back if you need to. If you're doing fine, lose my number. I love telling patients that. And I love the fact that I know I'm doing something right because I don't get lots of returns. If I was doing something wrong, they'd keep coming back saying, I'm no better. This is a typical week. I start early and I leave early. The reason is I like to see my family. I'm not an early morning guy. I'm an early morning guy of necessity. Mondays I do medical legal work, 2 to 4 phone calls a month, by the way. And a phone call usually is I need some more medication, or boy, I still have leg pain after the epidural, and invariably the patient has the same leg pain they had for the epidural. It just helped for a couple of days and it's returned and they're worried. IME is an independent medical evaluation. I mean, someone is in a situation where the insurance company or someone involved wants another opinion from a different physician. They will send the patient to me. I'll say, I'll look at these copious records, evaluate the patient, and say, this is what I think is wrong with them. I think that they're done. Time to go back to work. I think they need a surgery. I think the diagnosis is incorrect, et cetera. They're pretty challenging and interesting. I'll give a deposition or two a month based on the fact that when you do IMEs, you often have to do a deposition. Your first couple of depositions as a physician, if you indeed do them, are somewhat daunting. After a while, I'm educating. I'm just talking to the lawyers and telling them, here's what's wrong and here's why and here's the evidence based, the basis behind what I say. And case reviews where, again, someone like an insurance company will send me a case and say, what do you think they should do with this patient? And I give an opinion. Teaching, I will not have more than 3 students at once because it's hovering over the patient, and the patients always come back and say, boy, those are too many students, but I love teaching students. I try to get to them early in the first and second year so we can convert them to PM&R. I think I'm preaching to the choir here. But we don't have enough presence in a lot of medical schools, and we're working on that. I have an MS4 elective rotation, ambulatory medicine rotation in the third year as well. I lecture at the med school, and I also do an admissions interview from the medical school, which is interesting. My favorite question to ask is, if you, living or dead, could talk to somebody, invite him to dinner, who would it be? Number one answer for the guys, Michael Jordan. I say, come on, let's go a little deeper. You got, you know, how about Jesus? Sports coverage, Michael Jordan, Jesus, you know, it's a toss-up. Sports coverage, I cover a couple of local high school football games. My son goes to the high school that I cover, so I just want to see, not my daughter coming, I just want to see who they're hanging around with. I'll hit the training room on rare occasion. It's really something I do more for the fun of it and more just to do it. It isn't really a big referral patient base for me. The orthopedists I'm with do the local high schools. I'll cover for them on occasion, but it's more fun for me. I used to do some Northwestern spine consultants. Some docs that I was with used to do all their epidurals for a bunch of years. Not so much so anymore. They switched things around, but that was fun. And it's always the bigger they are, the harder they fall. When you have a 6'3" lineman, he's going to pass out. 82-year-old, 4'10" grandma, she does fine. You'll see. In my practice, we have physical therapy. We own the therapist. We own the MRI machine, X-ray. We have work hardening in the back. We are starting to work in pharmacy. Basically, the more you do within your practice, why send things out from a monetary standpoint? The more you keep within your office, the more money you make. You just have to be ethical about it. Don't overutilize MRIs because you own the machine, for instance. Here's a picture of the office, just to let you know what a typical day. We own the building. I have a little lake with lots of ducks. This is the front area, the reception. That is my work wife, Kim, my assistant. She's wonderful. She's terrific. She's missed, I think, one day of work in 10 years, which is second best to me. That's my fluoroscopic machine. That's where that caudal of the guy swallowed tongue ring came out. We have physical therapy in the back, transcription. Everybody's hiding. You can see I took these a couple of weeks ago. We have full-time transcription. We have, I think it's 3.5 full-time transcriptionists. We do a lot of talking. That was a patient I saw last week. I think she's a gymnast or a cheerleader. So we have X-ray, MRI. I walked in the room and asked this nice lady if I could take a picture. This is my favorite thing. I saw her early in the morning, about 8 a.m., terrible leg pain, had it for a couple of weeks. I got her into the MRI next door. It happened to be open, MRI at 9. I saw her at 10:30, read the MRI myself. I read my own MRIs, did an epidural injection on her at 11. That's a great day. She was so happy and pleased. I don't get reimbursed for the visit in addition to the epidural. I could have said, come back tomorrow because I'll make more money. You know, you got to help the patient out and do the right thing. Oh, by the way, and she's very claustrophobic, and that is an open machine if you haven't seen an MRI close-up. And it's a good quality open machine. We have a strength and agility training unit in the back. I got a guy. We got this stuff pretty cheap. Someone's going out of business, and it's a wonderful thing. Sometimes life isn't all that clear. Our destination was a nice beach town called Tenakatita, and we saw that sign, so I made the family get out and take a picture. Essentially, we went straight ahead and found the beach. So go straight ahead. You'll figure it out. And this is what it's all about. I wanted to have my wife in the picture, but somebody's got to snap the picture. This is the El Junque rainforest in Puerto Rico under a waterfall. In any event, it's all about family, lifestyle, enjoying what you do. And, boy, I stumbled into this field. I did 2 years of general surgery first. You guys are light years ahead of me because it was the midst of my internship year, and I had to do a second year general surgery because I was too late to apply to PM&R programs. And best thing I ever did. I cannot tell you strongly enough. Okay, next.